This week, we'll have a replay of a show broadcast in October 2009. It's called Can the People Save the Environment? Welcome to New World Notes. This is Kenneth Doust. You ever feel like this? I look around at the world and I start feeling like some not very talented boxer in a fight in which I'm way overmatched, reeling and staggering from blow after blow to my cranium. Look around and it looks like we're being clobbered by almost every crisis possible. Worldwide economic depression, peak oil, global warming or climate change, which threatens catastrophic problems for all forms of life, depletion of the supply of potable water, catastrophic foreign debt, and a dollar whose value is plummeting. Two political parties both worshipping the same golden calf, neither showing any interest in saving the natural world from ecological catastrophe. There are more major crises, but those seven will do for illustration. As TV pundit Howard Beale would say,
"Woe is us! We're in a lot of trouble!"
The good news is that many citizens have decided not to wait for a leader like Moses to lead us out of here, but have been doing lots of things to help, if only a little. But given the absolute lack of useful leadership from the Neros on Wall Street and in Washington, and given the scarcity of well-organized citizen-based institutions at the grassroots, most of us are struggling to find ways, struggling to find things we can do to make things better, especially when it comes to preventing destruction of the ecosphere. Today we'll explore a few possibilities. Here are some testimonials from people who are trying different things. People who are trying to save the planet through acts of simpler living, including commuting by bicycle, using cloth shopping bags, raising backyard chickens in cities and suburbs, recycling water, and more. And we'll also hear from a naysayer on the political left, Derek Jensen, who argues that all such private enactments of a sustainable lifestyle help not at all, and in fact just give more power to the ruling elite greedheads who caused most of the problems in the first place. So, no simple ultimate answers today, guaranteed, but maybe at least you'll come across some ideas you'll want to try. I'll pop in at the end and try to pull a few threads together. Let's start small. There's a weekly 4-minute sketch for radio called Everyday Environmentalist. In this installment, the characters Dave and Anne discuss how they can help the environment by recycling water. You'll get to the backyard chickens afterwards.
The Everyday Environmentalists, Dave and Anne, bring you tips on how you too can help make the world a little better place to live in. So now, let's listen.
What a meal! I love this time of year. There's something special about being able to say that most of the meal came from our very own yard.
I agree, and that was a great salad. It's too bad we can't freeze lettuce. Then we could have salads like this all year round.
Well, it's my turn to wash the dishes. I'll go get the water started. Could you bring the dishes out?
Sure. I wonder what she meant when she said she was going to get the water started.
That was quick. Funny, I was sure we had more dishes than those few bowls, but that's okay with me since I'm washing.
Well, I was intrigued by something you said about getting the water started. I think maybe you know something I don't.
Not really. And it's still not ready.
Still not ready? I guess you're right. There's no water in the dishpan yet.
I know. See, the water's still coming out too cold. There's something wrong with the faucet. Or maybe we've just used up all the hot water already.
Are you just going to let the water run until it's hot enough to wash dishes in?
Well, sometimes I'll just let water run directly into the dishpan. But I think it's just easier to wait until the water's hot enough. See, that only took about a minute, so now I'll start filling the dishpan.
There's something wrong here. Think of all the water that was wasted while we waited for the right temperature. Can I do a quick experiment?
Does that mean you're going to experiment with the dishes that need to be washed?
Ha. No. Now let's turn the cold water on again, and then turn it off, Then let's put the plug in and see how much water we use getting water to the right temperature.
I'm not sure as an everyday environmentalist I really want to see this.
Look at this. The sink is a third full. There must be at least a gallon of water in here. We had to wait for it to get the water hot.
This is definitely a habit I need to change. I never realized how much water I used waiting for it to get to the right temperature.
You see, there's cold water in the pipes already, and it takes a while for the cold water to run out and to be replaced by the hot.
Okay, so it sounds like we need to come up with a way to recycle the water in the sink instead of sending it down the drain. It really is perfectly good water. If we put something in the sink to catch the cold water, we could use it for the houseplants or the herbs on the porch, or rinse out the bottles we recycle.
I think we're on the right track here. And now what happened to those bowls I brought out a couple of minutes ago?
I think you have a few more dishes than two bowls. I'm not sure how thoroughly you checked the table. What about the glasses we use, the silverware, the plates?
Just how much water pours out of your faucet each minute it's on? Think of ways to catch water, and just like anything else, recycle it.
Everyday Environmentalist is a production of KSVR Studios. Produced by Joseph C. McGuire. Technical engineering by Jay Charles. Scripts by Britta Eshte. Featuring Dave McConnell as Dave and Jim Justice as Ann. Let Dave and Ann show you how you too can be an everyday environmentalist.
Okay, that was in a different tone than the tone you usually hear on New World Notes. And some may find Dave and Anne to be an acquired taste. But in fact, I have gotten a few good ideas from the series, and here's one of my own. You know that bucket in the sink with a gallon of cold water? You can also use the water to flush a toilet. Swirl it into the bowl counterclockwise. Or you can use it to refill the toilet tank. Closer to our usual style is the weekly communication from America's favorite talking chicken, Bucky Bacaw. Bucky sees raising two or three chickens in your urban or suburban backyard not just as cheap food, but also as a boon to the environment and a blow against the empire of our unsustainable, corporate-controlled, industrialized, and ecologically distressed agricultural system. Usually, Bucky gives specific practical advice on backyard chickening. Here, though, he speaks more broadly about sustainability, peak oil, water conservation, factory farming, and other environmental concerns.
This is Bucky Bacaw with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. Bicycle transportation and backyard chickening share more than just the month of May as a time of recognition. They both fit perfectly into the Bucky Bacaw general agenda of promoting ways we can live sustainably and respectfully on the planet while having a good time right now. My regular listeners are probably already familiar with the part of the Bucky Bacaw agenda about creating a world where a chicken or three inhabit outdoor spaces across the planet, rural, urban, and suburban, because they provide pesticide-free bug control, all-natural composting, tilling and fertilizing service for your soil, delicious, nutritious, cruelty-free eggs, and of course, because their presence promotes peace and tolerance with their inspiring lovability. Bicycles can't do all that, but what they can do, if you use them for transportation, is help address dwindling oil supply, anthropogenic climate change, and local air quality issues. On a more self-interested level, if you inform yourself about the basics of proper bicycling with a few minutes reading or by participating in a local Bike Month event, using your bicycle for transportation also saves you money, is good for your health, and reduces stress. Just like backyard chickening, what's good for you is good for the planet, and what's good for the planet is good for you. Another thing backyard chickens and bicycles have in common is efficiency. Bicycling is the most energy-efficient mode of transportation, doesn't require petroleum, and beats walking the same distance by an energy factor of 3-1. In the same vein, backyard chickens are the most efficient converters of feed to protein of any livestock. Even to a pure, profit-believing capitalist, efficiency is a self-evident good thing. But when it comes to land use and transportation, efficiency is a matter of planetary survival. Whether you're talking about peak oil, peak soil, or peak water, the most reliable way to stave off the potential disaster that looms due to dwindling resources is to get more efficient, fast. Peak oil is the proposition that oil will never be extracted at a rate greater than it is being extracted now, that energy use is increasing, and the supply of oil is finite, and that no substantial equivalent is on the horizon. We face a similar situation in terms of water. We are using and wasting water faster than it can be replenished, defying the hydrology cycle you hopefully heard about in school. Water is used in massive amounts by industries, including industrial agriculture, and those same industries contaminate water by releasing effluents or agricultural runoff. In the case of soil, industrial agriculture focuses on monoculture, growing just one thing rather than sharing or rotating with crops that each add and delete different things. The result is soils become artificially high in certain compounds that can be toxic to soil bacteria and vegetables, and low in others that crops need, requiring chemical replenishment to grow anything, which in turn requires further depletion of both oil and water supplies. At the same time, arable land is turned into golf courses and landscape subdivisions, the kind of development which in turn pollutes soil and contributes to the erosion of soil, so it can't be used to grow food either. It takes 1,000 years to create an inch of soil by natural processes. Backyard chicanery is an important step in having closed systems that replenish what is used in production of eggs and vegetables. Hens will help convert your kitchen waste, as well as their own, into soil-building compost. Feeding yourself with backyard eggs and vegetables reduces your dependence on corporate food and the massive waste associated with it. A factory farm uses more energy per egg or vegetable than a competent backyard operation. One of the myths of capitalism is the so-called rule of economy of scale. Folks, bigger is not necessarily better, and is often not cheaper or more efficient. Furthermore, backyard food production dramatically reduces the need to transport food. Similarly, riding your bicycle saves petroleum in the trips you take, but also in the petroleum that doesn't have to be brought to you, and in the way it helps shape your thinking and behavior to more localized, more efficient modes of living. This is Bucky Bacall. I had a good time.
Look yonder, come in, mercy me. Three wise men in an SUV. Corporate logo on the side. Air-conditioned quiet ride. Thing go. Now bring your hands up nice and slow. Take us to the land of milk and honey. Sing and dance all night long. What you gonna do with all that money? What you gonna do when that money's all gone? Negotiation's just no fun. And it don't serve our interests none. Gonna turn up the heat till it comes to a boil. And then we'll go get that Arab oil. We'll suck it all up through the barrel of a gun. Every day's the end of days for some Republicans. Thank you.
I was going to talk about the many things we're doing in my own household to help save the environment. I started making a list. This list turned out to be pathetically short. The most insurrectionary blows against the empire it contained were bicycling sometimes, eat local produce, no chemicals on the lawn, reuse plastic bags, bring reusable cloth shopping bags to the supermarket. These are actually more convenient than those crappy plastic things the stores load you up with. And don't buy stuff unless you really need it. Move the Williams-Sonoma catalog directly from your mailbox to your recycling box. As a further aid to not buying stuff you don't need, donate all your TV sets to a homeless shelter. Okay, keep one to use, only as a monitor for playing DVDs from the library. As I said, my personal list of planet-saving activities is pathetically short. No backyard chickens, no hemp sandals. I still own a car and still buy all my electricity from the Ecodestructo Power and Light Company. And I've never developed a taste for miso. So Derek Jensen's depressing advice is comforting in a way. Jensen advises that none of those acts does a damn bit of good anyway. Let me read a condensed version of his article from Orion Magazine, July 8, 2009, reprinted at Common Dreams. A quick footnote, Jensen talks about water shortages, which may sound odd here in Connecticut. A water shortage is about the only problem New England doesn't have at the moment. But it's been a big problem in many other parts of the country. Jensen's piece is titled, "Forget Shorter Showers: Why Personal Change Does Not Equal Political Change." Would any sane person think dumpster diving would have stopped Hitler, or that composting would have ended slavery or brought about the 8-hour workday? Then why now, with all the world at stake, do so many people today retreat into these entirely personal solutions to the environmental crisis? We've been victims of a campaign of systematic misdirection. Consumer culture and the capitalist mindset have taught us to substitute acts of personal consumption for organized political resistance. Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth helped raise consciousness about global warming. But did you notice that all of the solutions presented had to do with personal consumption? Changing light bulbs, inflating tires, driving half as much. They had nothing to do with shifting power away from corporations or stopping the growth economy that is destroying the planet. Even if every person in the United States did everything the movie suggested, U.S. carbon emissions would fall by only 22%. Scientific consensus is that emissions must be reduced by at least 75%. Or let's talk water. We so often hear that the world is running out of water. People are dying from lack of water. Rivers are dewatered from lack of water. Because of this, we need to take shorter showers. See the disconnect? Because I take showers, I'm responsible for drawing down aquifers? Well, no. More than 90% of the water used by humans is used by agriculture and industry. Actual, living, breathing, individual humans use only 5%. People and fish aren't dying because the world is running out of water. They're dying because the water is being stolen. Or let's talk energy. Kirkpatrick Sale summarized it well. Quote, "For the past 15 years, the story has been the same every year. Individual consumption is never more than about a quarter of all consumption. The vast majority is commercial, industrial, corporate, by agribusiness and government." He forgot military. "So even if we all took up cycling and wood stoves, it would have a negligible impact on energy use, global warming, and atmospheric pollution." Unquote, quoting Kirkpatrick Sale there. Or let's talk waste. Municipal waste is basically everything that's put out at the curb, from government offices, from businesses, and from people's residences. In 2005, municipal waste production in the U.S. was about 1,660 pounds per person. Let's say you're a die-hard, simple-living activist, and you somehow reduce this to zero. You recycle everything. You bring cloth bags shopping. You fix your toaster instead of chucking it. Since municipal waste includes not just residential waste, but also waste from government offices and businesses, you march to those offices and convince them to cut down on their waste enough to eliminate your share of it. I've got some bad news. All municipal waste accounts for only 3% of total waste production in the United States. 3%. I want to be clear. I'm not saying that we shouldn't live simply. But let's not pretend that not buying much or not driving much or not having kids is a powerful political act, or that it's deeply revolutionary. It's not. Personal change does not equal social change. So how then, and especially with all the world at stake, how have we come to accept these utterly insufficient responses? I think part of it is that we're in a double bind. If we choose option one, if we avidly participate in the industrial economy, we lose. We really lose because industrial civilization is killing the planet, which means everyone loses. On the other hand, if we choose the alternative option of living more simply, thus causing less harm, we still really lose because industrial civilization is still killing the planet. The third option, acting decisively to stop the industrial economy, is very scary for a number of reasons, including the fact that we lose some of the luxuries to which we've grown accustomed, like electricity. And also, those in power might try to kill us if we seriously impair their ability to exploit the world. Even so, this is a better option than a dead planet. Besides being ineffective at causing changes necessary to stop this culture from killing the planet, there are at least three other problems with thinking that simple living is a political act, as opposed to living simply because that's what you want to do. The first is that it's predicated on the flawed notion that humans inevitably harm their land base. Simple living as a political act consists solely of harm reduction, ignoring the fact that humans can help the Earth as well as harm it. We can rehabilitate streams, we can get rid of noxious invasives, we can remove dams, we can disrupt a political system tilted toward the rich, as well as an extractive economic system. We can destroy the industrial economy that is destroying the real physical world. The second problem, and this is another big one, is that it incorrectly assigns blame to the individual, and most especially to individuals who are particularly powerless, instead of assigning blame to those who actually wield power in the system and to the system itself. Kirkpatrick Sale said, "The whole individualist, what you can do to save the Earth guilt trip is a myth. We, as individuals, are not creating the crises, and we can't solve them." The third problem is that it accepts capitalism's redefinition of us from citizens to consumers. By accepting this redefinition, we reduce our potential forms of resistance to consuming and not consuming. Citizens have a much wider range of available resistance tactics than consumers do. The good news is that there are other options, besides doing nothing or else making ourselves pure. We can follow the examples of brave activists who lived through other difficult times. Nazi Germany, Tsarist Russia, antebellum United States. They did far more than seek moral purity. They actively opposed the injustices that surrounded them. We can follow the example of those who remembered that the role of an activist is not to navigate systems of oppressive power with as much integrity as possible, but rather to confront and take down those systems.
So, I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Well, mad prophets are hard to argue with, and that includes Bucky Bacaw, Derek Jensen, and Howard Beale. Bucky says what's good for you is good for the planet. Jensen says keeping your own navel lint-free won't do a damn thing to clean up the waste dump next door. Howard Beale doesn't know what to do except scream, and I can relate to all three positions. So here's my considered advice. Do all three. Doing each will help you do the other two better. Here's an analogy. I have some friends who are secular Jews. They identify with the long-standing Jewish cultural tradition and want to be a part of the Jewish community. They just don't particularly believe in God. Now, these friends of mine follow the kosher dietary laws at least as well as the religious Jews I know. Why? Well, not because they believe God commanded them to. Rather, they put some effort into keeping kosher for their own sake, because doing so helps connect them to a community, and in community there is strength and help and guidance. And they do it to remind themselves that they still have some duties to perform, some obligations to the planet or to humankind, even if not to an anthropomorphic God. They do it to remind themselves that humans are not the lords of the universe, and there is work that must be done. I admire these people. In the same way, wearing hemp sandals, commuting by bicycle, growing one's own vegetables, etc., 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 will do nothing to stop the Pentagon and Archer Daniels Midland and the U.S. Senate and Ford Motor Company from destroying the planet. Jensen is right. Only well-planned, large-scale political action has a chance of making a real change. But doing all of this personal stuff connects us to a good community and reassures us that we are not powerless and not without duties, and gives us strength to work harder in the political fight to make systemic change. So, on behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust, the Mad Prophet of the Airwaves, Jr., advising illegitimi non carborundum and wishing you a good week. Ciao.